On their first date more than 30 years ago, Randall took Lena to an Ike and Tina Turner concert. From the minute they sat down in the fifth row from the stage, she knew he wanted to impress her, even though he hadn't needed to. She would have sat with them in the park, gone to the drive-in, eaten Wheaties in the narrow half-kitchen of his studio apartment, done whatever he wanted. She'd been that eager to be with him. The Ikettes crowded onto the narrow stage while Ike's deep bass warmed up the audience. Like a chant, his words tumbled soft and low. A hush fell over the auditorium as if the guitar riff brought down the house lights. Blamp, the trumpet spit, up, down, left, right, blamp, blamp. Suddenly, Tina pranced across the stage, swinging her store-bought hair, the mic, the fringe on her sequined dress. Her taut legs pumped like a runner about to hit the finish line, her short dress coming close to revealing all that was underneath. The music increased to a faster, throbbing tempo. Girls cried. Men beckoned to Tina. The Ikettes moved with Tina step for step, pounding the stage in three-inch heels. Lena inched toward the crowded center aisle, along with everyone else, to get up on the stage and dance with Tina. Randall caught her by the waist, leaned down, and pressed his lips against her ear. "You're as cool as Tina Turner," he whispered, him as cool in a hip 60s way as he meant she was. Trembling from the heat of his body, the ripple of his chest, the fuzz of his mustache, Lena kissed him. The clamorous crowd and loud music disappeared into the distance, and for years she remembered thinking that, as corny as it seemed, they were the only two people in the auditorium. Now those memories rush back as she watches a wrinkled TV personality melt in Tina Turner's smile. Lena lifts her glass. It would be nice to ooze such charm and self-assurance in a way so subtle and subdued that it ought to be bottled. Randall believes that good liquor deserves a toast. So here's to Randall and to Tina.
Good morning and welcome to the February edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Patricia Welch.
And I'm Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
And we have been listening to Jacqueline E. Luckett reading from her book, Searching for Tina Turner. Ms. Luckett, welcome to Black Book Talk.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Wow, that's just really a great beginning for a relationship. I'm not seeing any relationship between that and Tina Turner and Ike, but can you tell us a little bit more about the book? Take us a little further down the path.
I will. Well, Searching for Tina Turner is the story of Lena Harrison Spencer, a woman who's got some decisions to make. She's been married to her husband for 20-some-odd years, but there's something going on between them, and especially within herself, where she needs something or someone to make her feel that she's worthy, to make her know that the things that she wants to do in her life are not only worth happening, but able to happen.
Okay. You know, stories about women who are having sort of midlife crises and realizing that their ideal marriages aren't ideal and their perfect children aren't perfect, they're not uncommon. What makes this story unique?
Well, you're right. They're not uncommon, but unfortunately, neither is the problem that happens to many, many women, baby boomers today. But I think what makes Searching for Tina Turner special is that she's focused on a role model. We think of role models when we're young, when we're developing, but as we get older in life, we don't think about the people around us who have done things that we can emulate. And for my character, Tina Turner is exactly that person. Now, Tina went through a whole lot, and my character does not have that physical abuse. But the important thing about Tina Turner was that she finally realized that everything that she needed to make her happy and to move on with her life and her singing, those things were all within herself. And so this is the message that the character in the book gets from him, and that's what I think is different.
Okay. Now, I have seen a picture of you. As a matter of fact, I've seen a video of you on your website.
Uh-huh.
Do people tell you that you look like Tina Turner? Because I think you do.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. It's very funny. I haven't always worn my hair in a natural, like many black women. We go back and forth. But I think that for me, wearing my hair like that and streaking it with a little bit of color gave me a sense of freedom. And although my intention was never to look like Tina Turner, you won't believe the number of people who have said that to me. And while I was in the process of writing the book and hadn't really shared with a lot of people, you know, the title or what my book was about, people would come up to me and say, "You look like Tina Turner with that hair." So I thought it was a message that the universe was sending to me, and I'll continue to wear it that way for a while.
It works for you.
It does. I love it.
Well, where did the idea come from for the story?
Well, I divorced about 7 years ago, and it seemed that at the same time I was getting a divorce that unfortunately several other women that I knew were also getting divorced. And all of us had had long-term marriages. And in conversations, we began to talk about, so what comes next? And that whole idea of what comes next sort of rattled around in my head. At the same time, Tina Turner's album, Simply the Best, I believe, just went platinum for the first time in the United States, so there was a lot of press about her. She was everywhere. And somehow this idea clicked in my mind. What if a woman was inspired by Tina Turner to make the hard choices in her life? And from there, it just went on. I'd been working on a book of short stories, and this just sort of took me over. So I went with the flow, and here it is.
And it's great. You know, I should mention for those who are just joining us that you are listening to Black Book Talk on KBOO FM. We are talking to Jacqueline Luckett about her book, Searching for Tina Turner. You know, so I wish you would share something with our audience, which I think is very telling. You were being interviewed and your mother was in the audience and you spoke about your feelings about where you are in life and where she is and what about her keeps her vibrant.
I'll tell you, to look out in an audience and see a friendly face is a wonderful thing, but to see the face of your mother just filled with pride is a most amazing thing. And I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying that she is 88 years old or 88 years young, still beautiful. She bakes cookies for all of my readings that she attends to. But, it, you know, as kids, as a child, you know your parents are proud of you. Hopefully you know that your parents are proud of you. But when you become older, it's not quite as obvious. But my mother has been just so supportive of me in this journey. I autographed a book for her, and my book is actually dedicated to her and my sister. And, you know, she has it in a special place in her home. And she would, every time she finished a chapter, she'd call me up and tell me how great it was, and at one point in time, she asked me where I got all those ideas from, and I had to laugh because I've always been known as a very imaginative and dramatic child, so I had to tell her that this was the benefit of all of that, but yes, it's fabulous to have her with me.
And you talked about, you know, the fact that she, in her 80s, is beautiful. And I think as you get older, you can see that. I'm happy to say that my mother, who's 85, is with me. And I think she's listening this morning. And she, Miss Gladys Cox Hill, is beautiful and supportive. And those of us who are lucky enough to have our mothers modeling the kind of women that we want to be at all ages are very fortunate.
Absolutely. And there's a strength in women that many people have talked about, and sometimes we don't recognize it, but when it's so close to us in terms of our mothers and we know that we can model that strength, it's a gift. It definitely is. But I have to tell you that I also have a connection to Portland through the Talking Drum bookstore. So if my cousin Gloria McMurtry is listening, I hope it's okay if I say hello to her.
I think it's okay. It's probably great to have a cousin who's in the books business.
Right. Books are, you know, books are a wonderful thing, and I'm a bit addicted to them, have always been. Never go any place without a book in my purse, in my car. There are several books on my desk, and I have a wall of books in my home. And it's important. It's important to sell, to support all of our booksellers.
When my children were teenagers, I used to say to them, books are an addiction that you can handle.
Uh-huh.
Because even if you go to the bookstore and you spend a lot of money, the police are not watching you. They are not after you because you're addicted to books. It's not illegal.
Absolutely not. And my kids, I mean, they knew they could sucker me. I mean, if we went to the library, if we went to a bookstore, we would spend, you know, hours there, and they'd walk away with handfuls of books because books are a wonderful thing.
Yes. I read that you are working on a second book.
I am. I'm in the midst of making my final changes right now. My second book is called Passing Love, and that will be out in January 2012. It's a bit of a different story, both in the way it's told and the subject matter. It's the story of two women who go to Paris thinking that that wonderful city is going to change their lives. One is told in today's world, and the second story is told in the Paris of the early 50s when there were lots of black expatriates in Paris, and jazz was just really the hot scene. So my story, part of this story, revolves around jazz and blacks in the Saint Germain area of Paris.
Well, I have to ask this. Did you get to go there to do research?
I'm a bit obsessed with Paris, it seems, because there is a little bit of Paris in Searching for Tina Turner, and I have to confess, you know, being responsible to my readers, yes, I did go to Paris and toured and spent about a month there just not only looking at the sites and learning the history, but also just getting some of the sensory details of it, you know, what it smells like, what the people are like. It's one of my favorite places in all of the world.
See, listeners, good fiction requires research, too. We don't always get that message out, so if you're out there writing fiction, you got to figure out, sometimes you just have to go to the mat. You have to go to Paris.
That's absolutely true, because one person asked me a question about fiction, sort of comparing it to nonfiction, making the point that in nonfiction, we get facts and details that are reliable and checked. But you're right, a good fiction writer is going to have some of those same details as well, so that when you're talking about a particular city or a particular topic, there's some research that the writer has done in order to bring a sense of realism to the work.
Okay, again, a reminder, this is KBOO-FM Portland. You're listening to Black Book Talk. We're talking to Jacqueline Luckett, author of Searching for Tina Turner.
Jacqueline, we were just talking about how in black fiction, well, a few minutes ago, Cashmere Cage was mentioned.
Right.
And the woman was drowning in luxury. We were talking about how in black fiction we don't see that mentioned so much. Having a character who is aspiring, almost there, to be a CEO.
Right.
And his wife drowning in luxury. Where did those ideas come from?
Well, it's a cashmere cocoon. And the idea came from really looking at the city of Oakland that is so diverse economically and racially, and trying to tell a story that really supports the fact that there are black people with money, there are black people who are in high positions in very good companies, and to just tell a little bit of the story about that world. I know that once when I approached an agent before I had mine, she said that was an okay idea, but something had to happen to the woman in order to make the story believable or even interesting. And her thought was, well, you know, the woman has to fall into some demise, she has to be out on the streets and be poor. But that's not always the case. So my idea was to really try to expose readers to a world where you can have everything and still not be happy, but not be pouty about it or be considered spoiled. There are things in our heart that have to be satisfied as well as external things as well.
Well, I'm just happy to see this person, this group, presented in fiction. I mean, I remember how, what was it, like 2 decades ago when The Cosby Show came on, there were so many people who kept saying, this is not the Black experience. And as a book that's been published fairly recently, Disintegration, says there is no one Black experience. There is no one Black community. Certainly, you know, there are various economic and social classes. And indeed, nowadays, there are Black folks who are, and have been for a while. There's always been a Black upper class. It just hasn't really been presented widely. So just as a reminder to young people who are reading these books that, you know, it is not out of your reach to be very comfortable if that's what you want and you can work for it and everything, that there is absolutely that possibility. So I was just happy to see that portion of the Black community presented because we need that balance out there. But now let me ask you something in terms of balancing life. Are you a full-time author and that's what you're devoting yourself to now? Or are you also doing that and doing some other things?
I am a full-time author. Typically, for example, now I'm really working hard on getting, I have a deadline in a couple of days to get my manuscript in. So my days are pretty much filled with writing, and I try to live in that world of my characters and my story pretty much throughout the day. I try to get in some community work every once in a while, and when I'm not writing, I'm reading. And for anyone that's aspiring to write, they should know that reading is just as important as writing. You can be influenced by somebody's, style, the way they put their words together, or just get a flavor for how a good sentence is written or what it means to have a good plot and how to put the whole thing together. So for me, reading is entertainment, and I'm studying at the same time. So that's my life as a full-time writer.
Okay.
Also, we talked a little bit about the process of writing. I have to say that writing, I was not schooled in writing. I have a degree from college in sociology. And to say I'm self-taught probably isn't the best thing. I've read a lot. I've been to a lot of conferences. And you made an interesting comment before we went to the break that lots of people think that a book just comes out the first time you put words to paper. And I was one of those people, and I remember going to a Writers of Color workshop in San Francisco and being amazed that this very successful author said talked about revisions, that it just didn't happen the first time, that it took revision after revision after revision. And that is what writing is. It's not only the story, but it's revising for emotions, for the character. I'm also part of a writing group, The Finish Party, and that's 8 women of color who we get together about once every other month and actually critique each other's work. So that's been really, really good for my process. And there's a couple of pretty good writers in the group. All of us except for one have been published. And so there's a really great knowledge base.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, we can tell by reading your book that it works well. We thank you so much for joining us this morning. Again, for everybody who's listening, the title of the book is Searching for Tina Turner. It's written by Jacqueline Luckett. It's published by Grand Central Publishing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure to be here or to talk to the people of Portland.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.